And welcome back to the first annual award ceremony. I'm your host, Quentin Phillipson, and with me is my co-host, who does not need Inception to incept my dreams, Andrea Tennis. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing well, you know, besides having a bad hair day today. Doing pretty good.
Yes, other than that, which, you know, isn't news.
I know, I have one every other day.
That's right. But anything new besides watching two Best Picture nominee films?
Nothing really new going on this week. Work's been slow but busy considering all the restrictions for how many people are allowed in our store. Other than that, nothing at all.
Very exciting stuff.
I'm very excited about our poker night on Friday.
There we go. That's something to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
By the time this podcast comes out, it'll be a week past, so I'm sure you've already won. By the time people are listening to this, you'll be rolling in dough.
Yeah, $50 richer.
That's right. All these guys better back off. It'll be everyone's sugar mama.
I don't know about that. But I am a pool shark, so yeah.
This will be an archive. You'll be looking back at this to reminisce of when you were poor. You'll be like, oh yes, I remember back in the day when I was poor and I was talking about True Grit and Inception. Oh, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, it'll be real classy.
So anyways, we discussed 127 Hours and Toy Story 3 last time. And now we are going to be discussing two more nominations from the 2010 films and the 2011 Oscar ceremony. And we'll be discussing True Grit and Inception. I'm sure Andrew is very thrilled about both of these.
Yeah, they were both really well done movies by two really well known directors. So I was pretty pumped to watch them.
That's right. We have my favorite directors, the Coen brothers, and my brother's favorite director, Christopher Nolan, side by side here.
My favorite director wasn't in the running, but that's okay.
I'm sorry to hear that. Maybe when we get to the 2015 Oscars, we'll discuss your director.
Woo woo! Can't wait.
Yeah, and that's the only year he's been nominated.
That's sad. Do you know who my favorite director is?
Well, I do live with you, so I imagine so. Now, have you seen either of these films before going into this?
I had never watched either of these films before, and honestly, I didn't really know much about either of them.
Yeah, I guess we'll discuss one before the other. We'll talk about True Grit first, since that was the first movie Andrea picked. We go by the order of the viewing, and Andrew chose this one first. And I've never seen True Grit before, and I was under the impression it was a Western, which it was, with two cowboys, which I guess it was. But I had no idea the female lead, Hailee Steinfeld, would have been in this film. She was in the background of the poster, and that's it. But she's basically the lead in this film. I don't know why everyone's pretending she's not. Was she not the lead?
Yeah, she's basically one of the first people you see when the movie starts. And she is the very last person you see when the movie ends. So I felt like she would be more towards the front of the photo, maybe more center than she was, because she was really hit on this poster.
Yeah, Matt Damon is at the very front. And excuse me, but Matt Damon was barely in the film. Like, I guess he was in the film. He's always on screen. But I felt like he just was there as a background character. He never really talked. Rooster, I get. Rooster and Haley's character, I believe her name is Maddie. Maddie and Rooster, those seem to be like the two leads in my eye. But for some reason, mostly because I believe this was Haley's first actual film, so she's not a big name character, so the Coen brothers went, all right, Matt Damon, he's gonna be the quote-unquote lead here.
Yeah, that's the only conclusion I could really come to as well. She hasn't been in much. I had watched her in one previous movie, which I loved her in, but she played complete polar opposite of how she played in this movie. Yeah, she wasn't very well known at all. So yeah, they definitely just threw Matt Damon out there in front because he's been in quite a bit and he's been around for a long time.
And also, the movie you're talking about was 2018. This is 2010. So this was way earlier in her career. So, I just don't think she's been in that much. I believe I looked into it. This was the first full-length film she was in. She was in some smaller films, but like a big theatrical film. I believe this might have been her first one. So she just didn't have the name recognition, which doesn't seem like a big deal. But, us casual moviegoers, once we hear Dwayne the Rock Johnson, or I guess that's it, Leonardo DiCaprio. If we hear these names, then we'll flock to the theaters. But I don't know who's paying a $12 movie ticket to watch Hailee Steinfeld on the cover of a Western film. And maybe that's it too, Westerns. That's what all the 50-year-old boomers love to watch. So they. I'm sure if they were told, oh, this young 15-year-old girl is the lead character, I don't know how excited they're gonna be. I think, oh yeah, Matt Damon, I've seen him in some racing movies. I like that guy. I'm 50. I like racing and Western films. I like that Damon kid. I'm sure they'll watch True Grit if it's got Damon.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
that's a really good point. He definitely probably brought a lot of viewers into that movie.
You liked my impression of a 50-year-old man? Did I
Yeah,
nail it?
yeah. Yeah, you're pretty close on that impression. Good job.
Should I incorporate that into the bedroom, my 50-year-old man impression?
I don't think I would be down for that. No, thanks.
Oh, well, that Matt Damon kid liked my impression.
Well, you can save it for Matt Damon then.
Yeah. Save it when I'm in the
See,
bedroom with him.
that's what I was about to say. You can take that to the bedroom with him.
Oh yeah, you hear that, Matt? You can reach me at Quentin Philipson on Letterboxd, and we can, meet up sometime. But besides Matt Damon, which honestly I don't remember that much about him in the film, I think we've said his name more than the film did.
Yeah, we've definitely talked about him more and why he was a focus on the poster.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, we put more focus on him than the poster and film even did. But we can talk about the nominations this film received. Obviously, Best Picture. That's why we're discussing it. It was also nominated for Adapted Screenplay, just like the previous two films, Toy Story 3 and 127 Hours. This falls in that category with Adapted Screenplay. It was also nominated for Sound Mixing and Sound Editing. If you've heard the news, Andrea, both of these awards are now combined into one, moving into 2020 movies. What?
No, I didn't know that, but I would have assumed that anyway, because it sounds like it's basically almost the same thing.
Yeah, they've always had it be editing and mixing. They just changed it now, a few weeks ago. Very exciting
Whoa.
information.
Whoa, very upset. I feel very informed right now. Thanks.
Yes, I've been one of the advocates that they should have changed this a while ago. Because there is a difference. It's taken me a while to look into it, but there is a defined difference between the two of them. But I don't even think the voters know what the difference is. Because last year, me and my brother got into a real argument about this. I think we both think they screwed up the nomination. One went to Ford v Ferrari, one went to 1917, and I think they flipped. I don't think the voters know what's going on. So if the voters can't even vote properly on the difference between them, just put them as one. I agree with this decision. And hopefully, maybe if they combine them, maybe now they're going to look for a new award to give out. So it's still the same amount of awards during the night. So I think it's for the better. It was also nominated for directing, which I believe is the first one we've discussed so far. So far, none of the films we've discussed has gotten the directing nomination. It was also nominated for costume, cinematography, art direction, supporting actress, and lead actor. So it was nominated for nine, or sorry, it was nominated for 10 awards, because I keep forgetting the Best Picture nomination. But yeah,
that's 10. A lot. Wow. Wow, wow. How many did it end up winning?
None.
Oh, that sucks. Wow.
So it's literally The Irishman from last year, where it gets 10 nominees and he gets nothing, which is crazy.
Wow, yeah, because I would have thought this film at least would have got something.
Yeah. We can get into it now, actually. Let's discuss which of these awards we think it should have actually won. Do any of those catch your eye as to, yeah, actually, it should have won that for the year. It was pretty solid.
You said the one about cinematography. That's the background, right? Like, just what's going on and...
That's like the camera work, the shots.
I really liked, yeah, the area that it was filmed in. And I don't know, I thought it had pretty good shots in as well from what I can recall.
Yes, but it's funny how we're actually talking about it right now, because Inception won cinematography.
Oh, okay. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
100%.
I was going to say.
But, like, I did think it was really good. So...
The camera work was good. It's Roger Deakins, which mm-hmm. is a fantastic cinematographer.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed him before. He was the cinematographer for 1917 and for most of the Coen films. So Fargo, which me and Andrew are both obsessed with.
Love it.
He did the cinematography for that, which is... I think that's a much more beautifully shot film than True Grit. True Grit did have some nice shots. I thought some of the camera work was great, but... That's expected with Deakins. But yeah, the issue is Inception is out this year. And that just has some of the most iconic shots in film history. Like, it has some beautiful shots. Obviously, we'll get into it later on. But it's hard to really make a case for why it should win that. I'll make the case for supporting actress. This is like Brad Pitt from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. How is Hailee Steinfeld even considered a supporting actress when she was basically the lead, in my mind?
Yeah, because there would have been no other lead female in this film. She was basically the only female you see from beginning to end. With probably some minor appearances from other females. But, yeah, I don't understand why she would be considered a supporting actress.
Yeah, I felt like they found a very fine line to consider her a supporting actress. But I'm surprised she didn't win. How did she not win? What supporting actress was better than her? I should look this up.
I was going to say, do you have it on there who actually won for a supporting actress? Because I would really like to know. She was phenomenal for her first film. And I don't really know what could have beat her.
It is from one of the next films, which is The Fighter. So be watching the movie The Fighter relatively soon, and the supporting actress for that film ended up winning.
Yeah, and right now I just have nothing to base that off, because I've never seen that movie.
We've never seen it.
And I don't even really know what it's about, except I'm going to assume it's about fighting, like street fighting or something.
That's a good guess.
Thanks, I'm good at guessing.
You killed it. Right. And believe it or not, The Black Swan is about a bunch of birds.
That Black Swan was about a ballet.
It is.
I was like, what?
The movie The Kids Are All Right, that's going to be about kids being all right.
Yes.
Yeah, believe it or not. But yeah, not a single win here. I think supporting actress should have went to her. But obviously we haven't seen The Fighter yet, so it's really hard to pinpoint that. Anything else here that you think really stood out to you? Costumes? I know the costumes were really nice.
Yeah, I was going to say costumes were amazing. I thought that they really fit the Wild West and how they were designed. So I'd be interested to know what actually did win costume design. The movies we've seen so far, none of the other ones' costumes really stick out at this point.
Yeah, though I just looked it up here. The winner for costumes was the film Alice in Wonderland, the live action Alice in Wonderland, which is very unique and gorgeous costume. So I get it.
I could see how that would give True Grit a little bit of a run for its money.
Yeah. True Grit does have gorgeous costumes, but I've always thought to myself that the winner for costumes should just be the most iconic costume, right? Like I heard somebody in a YouTube video once say, if you saw that costume on a mannequin, could you point at it and go, hey, that's from that film. And I think Alice Wonderland, I think a lot of its outfits is very unique, especially the Queen of Hearts outfit and stuff like that. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, True Grit is just Western outfits. Nothing crazy.
That's true, except for that last scene. And I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but where they have to make that dress with only one armhole.
Yeah, that's right. Very iconic. I'd like to see a mannequin wear that dress.
I know. What are they going to do there?
Well, mannequins don't have arms to begin with, so I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, they do. At least the ones that Express did.
Yeah, well, you know. I'm sure we could find one that doesn't. I know a few in Walmart or something.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't shop at Express. I go to Walmart and Value Village. And those mannequins don't got arms. They can't afford them.
Hot dog.
All right, so we can discuss True Grit here. The beginning is obviously about the lead, not the supporting actress, Maddie, whose father was murdered by Josh Brolin's character. And it's basically her on a hunt to find this guy. And she's asking for the roughest, toughest guy to hunt him down. And she comes across Rooster, who was nominated for lead actor. He was great. Definitely the weakest lead actor nominee, I think, of all of them, though. But I do just think this is a stacked year for lead actors. There was a strong group here. He was great. I loved the chemistry between the two of them. I know Andrea loved the chemistry between them. Not in a romantic way, but in just like a father-daughter kind of way. She lost her father, and she's on this hunt to find down Josh Brolin, and she ends up finding a new father figure, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah, the chemistry that the two have on set working together was just really awesome. Like, at first it's kind of rough between them, but then, like, as it goes on, you can really tell they have actually made a true bond with each other, and it's really nice all the way until the end.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was great. I think, for me personally, we'll just jump straight into it. Favorite scene or moment? My favorite moment is mostly just a character, and that's Maddie. I thought she absolutely carried this film. Maybe that's why I'm so butthurt that she's not getting the love she deserves. Supporting actress. But she was amazing. I thought she was such an endearing lead in my mind, and I thought her hunt to find this guy down and her doing anything to get there was just awesome. I thought her haggling that one guy to get all the horses money back at the beginning, that was great. I just think she's a very headstrong character, and I'm just a big fan of Maddie.
Yeah, she is just a true badass. I would agree with you. I loved her as a character. Every moment that she was in, she was always doing something just because she really wanted to get this revenge for her father. And she was just phenomenal. And then the very last scene was probably my favorite. But once again, don't want to give any spoilers away.
We can discuss spoilers. We are discussing the film.
Okay.
You don't want to be spoiled on True Grit. Maybe you can pause the film. Check the movie out. Come back to us. All right. I'm sure.
Okay.
Andrew, I'm pretty sure they just hit unpause after watching the film, so it's fresh on their mind now. Please remind them what the last scene was.
That's so funny. Okay. So at the very end, she ends up getting bit by this rattlesnake. And it really shows you how close her and Rooster's relationship has become, because he goes, he gets her, he sucks the venom out of her arm, and he basically goes all night and all day just to get her to a doctor's. And then the very last scene is like 15, 20 years later, I'm not sure, and she goes to see him, and it shows that they actually had to amputate her entire arm, which was really cool. And I don't know, I just like the whole last probably 20 minutes of the movie the best.
Hold on, I just something clicked with me here. Last podcast we discussed 127 Hours, and now we're discussing True Grit, where the ending for both films is a guy running out shouting to get someone's attention, please help, and then they collapse, the person turns around and runs back to save them, and at the end of the day somebody loses an arm.
No. I did not even put two and two together. Wow.
And maybe the Academy members are like, we only like people with two arms because neither of them got a single win at the Oscar Awards.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that. That's hilarious.
So James Franco and the Coen brothers, I'm sure they had a few drinks after that award ceremony.
They were not happy.
Yeah. Just you describing it, I just thought, wait, was she talking about 127 hours or is she talking about True Grit? Oh, wait a second.
No.
Yeah. You know, they both were stuck in a very closed space. You know, the only difference was he got his arm crushed and she got bitten by a snake. Which would you rather have, Andrew? Your arm crushed by a boulder or bitten by a snake?
Bitten by a snake. 100%. Yeah, I don't want my arm crushed by a boulder and I have to cut it off. No, thank you.
Yeah, he had to cut it off. She just had to have some other dude suck the venom out. That's not as big of a deal.
And then she basically passed out after that.
Yeah. Hey, if Jeff Bridges wants to suck me, that's fine by me. That's much better than me cutting my arm off.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, you know, very similar films now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. I guess that's the only similarities. The rest of it, it's quite different. But what was your favorite scene out of all this? Was it the snake scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think scene-wise, that was definitely the best scene. I think the last 20 minutes was really good. I found the rest of the film very slow and really nothing too exciting. I loved the character build from Maddie. I thought Maddie was great. I thought the final 20 minutes was great. And like you said, just her trying to meet Rooster at the end with the one arm missing. It was a very powerful moment for her to meet this father figure of hers one last time. I loved everything about the last 20 minutes. It was very solid. But I thought before that, most of it was very slow for me. I wasn't like loving most of the scenes. And maybe it's because I'm such a big Coen Brothers fan that I thought this was going to be another slam dunk 5-star film. If you guys know me, I love No Country for Old Men. I love Fargo. I love Big Lebowski. All three are top 10 films in my mind of all time. I love them all. So I knew this wasn't going to be as good, but I still thought it would be having the Coen brother charm. But I felt like we were really missing the jokes. I felt like there wasn't anything super funny or entertaining about it.
Yeah, didn't you say this was, like, their first serious film and people really weren't expecting this from them?
Well, to be fair, I think that was No Country for Old Men. I think that was way more serious, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this was just, like, way, way more dry. I'm not sure. With No Country for Old Men, it was more of, like, the thrill of watching him be chased. And that kind of just kept me on the edge of my seat. With this, I think it was a little just bit more dry for people that aren't used to how the, or sorry, are used to how the Coen brothers work.
Yeah, and I feel like, honestly, my biggest issue with this film and what I would say was my least favorite part of the movie was Josh Brolin's character. And it pains me to say this, but I feel like the Coen brothers are so good at making villains. I feel like Fargo, I think the funny looking guy, I think he's a great villain. Somebody that you just love, but you also want to see him lose. Like, I think he's great. Obviously, Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men is one of the greatest villains in history of film.
He's so good.
So it's hard to top those two. But Josh Brolin, you don't see him for the first half of this film. Mm-hmm. All you hear is these horror stories that he's this mass murderer and he murdered Maddie's father. And I'm not picturing Josh Brolin to be purple like Thanos, but I'm at least picturing Thanos-esque evil Josh Brolin, like really scary, like he's gonna be a real menacing character for Maddie to overcome. But is it just me, or was Josh Brolin like a little bit of a bitch? Like he was kind of like, oh my gosh, Maddie, I killed your father and I'm Josh Brolin. That was my voice of Josh Brolin. He seemed so whiny.
It was very weak for a Coen Brothers villain, if you ask me. He wasn't even really that scary. And like you said, he was kind of a little bitch to the other cowboys who were like in his posse. And they made him stay with Maddie whenever they tried to take off. So like he wasn't that scary. In my head, I'm trying to think, how did he even kill her dad? he seems, yeah, like a little bitch, kind of.
Yeah, I really... He was the biggest disappointment, especially because we didn't see him for the first half of the film. Like, it was all built up in my head. Oh, man. He's going to be the next Anton Chigurh, and he's going to be really menacing. I kept telling Andrew, I was like, oh, man, this guy played Cable, and he was a pretty badass character in that. He played Thanos. He was in No Country for Old Men. Coen Brothers, they know how to write him. They will make this guy awesome. And then, yeah, it was kind of like, the you know, I felt like he was a cast member from The Wiggles. He just seemed like such a, you know, what's up, kids? Let's hang out. Like, I don't know, it seemed like I'd be down to have, like, a drink with this dude. He doesn't seem scary at all.
I mean, and he even let Maddie shoot him. Like, I don't think he thought that she was going to shoot him, but yeah, she doesn't really even hesitate. She shoots the guy. And, you know, I was thinking that whenever he saw her, he was literally going to run over to her and, like, strangle her or something. I wasn't really sure what to expect, but I expected something more than what actually happened.
Yeah. Haley, or Maddie, kicked this dude's ass. He didn't stand a chance against her.
Mm-hmm. She really did.
Yeah, she was way scarier than he was. I would much rather face off a fight against Josh Brolin's character than Maddie.
Yeah, she was definitely a true badass in this film. Yeah,
I wouldn't be able to beat Maddie. Maddie would kick my ass. But I think I could take on Josh Brolin. He didn't seem like that big of a deal. This was maybe the least scariest Josh Brolin I've ever seen. And, you know, that says something when this guy's supposed to be real scary. Maybe this was supposed to be a joke, like a little twist on the story, but I don't know. It did not work with me. Now, do you think this film deserves to be nominated? Do you think this was worthy enough to be nominated for the best films of the year?
I will say, I think it might have been on the weaker side of best films. I did enjoy it. I really did. It does sit towards the bottom of the what we've seen so far of the Coen Brothers films for me personally. Now, especially now that we've kind of talked about it a little bit more. I don't know. I still feel like it did deserve to be nominated, but like I get why it didn't win.
Yeah, no, I don't have an issue with it being nominated. You know, there's 10 films. You can't have 10 stellar films make it. But so far, of all the films we've discussed, this is definitely the weakest one. And I hate to say that. I hate to say the Coen Brothers is the weakest film so far on this list. But I think 127 Hours, Toy Story 3, and Inception, I think they are all stronger than this film. But, you know, I still feel pretty good about it. I think it's a good film overall. I don't think it should have been nominated for 10 awards. I think that's the bigger deal for me. I feel like 127 Hours did a lot more things right with the stuff they had, and that was nominated for less awards. So it is a bit of a, I don't know, it does seem a bit strange. But yeah, I think nominated for Best Picture, that's totally fine. True Grit does have a lot of great stuff, mostly Maddie for me, but I also think the costumes is great. I do think the directing is pretty well done. Like, the build-up of the two leads, in my mind, were really great. So I thought overall it's still a solid film. You know, just for Coen Brothers, a lot weaker. So, Andrea, we both have Letterboxd. I'm at Quentin Phillipson. You are at Andrea. I don't know. People don't need to follow us. Anyways, I was just going to ask, what would your ranking be for this film? What are you going to put it up on Letterboxd out of a 5-star? What are you thinking here?
You know, I've been thinking about it, and I'm honestly leaning towards a 3-star. Like, I really like the movie, but it didn't wow me, but it didn't disappoint me, and it just kind of sits in the middle for me. There's not much more to it. So I'm thinking a solid 3 is where I'm going to sit it, which is also, so far, my lowest Coen Brothers rated movie, but the other one.
Burn After Reading.
Oh, no, I forgot about Burn After Reading. Okay, sorry. My second lowest one.
Yeah, that's a good point. 3 probably does sound more right, but I'm going to stick with my gut. I still have this at a 3.5. I still think beautiful characters. I think the writing is still really great. I'm glad I got nominated for directing and screenplay. They were both very strong. And yeah, I think I would stick with 3.5 what would it be? Rattlesnakes out of 5?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with that here. Now we can discuss Andrea's favorite film of all of these so far. And that is going to be Inception. The reason why we saw True Grit, I believe, what was it, 1.5 weeks ago now? Quite a while ago, it's been.
We did him a little too far apart.
And that's because after True Grit, every single day I went, hey, Andrea, do you want to watch Inception? She goes, no, not Inception.
It's a long movie.
You want me to watch that crap? No. So we kept pushing him back, until I was like, hey, Andrea, we're going to be recording in 2 days. We're going to have to watch Inception soon. All right, fine.
I love your voices of me. It sounds just like me, like an old lady or something.
So very fresh on the mind. We watched this 2 days ago, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so very recently. And that's why we might have more to say about this film. Maybe not. But True Grit, it was hard to remember some of the stuff. But, you know, I think we did it. I think we know enough about it. But Inception, fresh on the mind, because we finally stopped dragging our butts here, Andrea. We got to watch it. What was your thoughts on Inception?
Honestly, yeah, I was really dragging on watching this movie. And it was mostly because it was a 2.5 hour movie. And also because it was kind of an action movie. And the longer you guys listen to us, the more you will realize I do not like action movies at all. And I watched it, though, and, you know, surprisingly, I really liked it. I didn't look at the clock as much as I thought I would. And it's probably the best film we've watched so far, in my opinion.
Yes.
Out of everything.
Yes. Good. I'm really glad to hear this. I thought I was going to have a fight with you on this. I was really expecting this to be the big divisive moment.
No, I don't know why. I don't know why you thought that, but like, yeah, it was good. And there were things I even really enjoyed about it. Because I knew it was going to be a deeper movie where you needed to pay attention to every little moment of it or you were going to forget something.
Yeah, I assumed Andrew wasn't going to pay that much attention, so I was trying to like help spoon feed her some of the information. But she picked it up pretty quickly. I remember very early on when it showed the little talisman to let you know if you're in the real world or not. And when he spun the topper, I leaned into Andrew's like, by the way, that's going to be very important later on. And Andrew just goes, what? So, like, they're just going to spin at the very end of the movie and we're going to wonder if it's reality or not? I was like, God damn it. She, like, put 2 and 2 together. Yeah, she was instantly like, oh, so now the end is going to be a question mark, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's one of the only things I really didn't like about this movie. I am not a big fan of open-ended movies like that, that kind of just leave it up to the interpretation. I need someone to kind of lead a horse to water, lead me to water. I don't know. I like to know what actually happens, not what my mind thinks.
Andrew, we're not talking about horses anymore. True Grit was 5 minutes ago. We've moved on.
Oh, man. I'm behind.
Yeah. Yeah. No horses in this movie. But I'm kind of the opposite with you. I love the open-endedness of it. And, you know, I think kind of making people talk about the movie afterwards is what makes movies like this successful. I feel like that moment at the very end is what makes this film as successful as it was. I feel like everyone went to the theaters to watch it. And I think many people went to watch it a second time to see if they can piece some stuff together. So this might have been the most successful, you know, box office wise out of all the films we're going to be discussing. This was, from my memory, a pretty huge film in the day. Everyone was talking about Inception and that final scene. Everyone was trying to figure out, is this reality? Is it a dream? What's going on? And it was a very fun thing to talk about with friends. At least I found it was. I felt like with a lot of my friends back when this movie came out, we're all trying to see if we can crack the code here of what was true, what wasn't, what did this mean? And it was a very fun film. But I had a much better time watching it this time. I felt like I understood a lot more. I felt like I loved a lot of the cinematography for this. And I guess we can move on to what it won and was nominated for. It was the winner for the cinematography. It also won sound mixing and sound editing and visual effects. So it won 4 Oscars. It was also nominated, believe it or not, for Best Picture, for original screenplay, score, and art direction.
None of this surprised me. I felt, honestly, it hit on a little bit of everything in this movie. And I don't know, I'm kind of surprised that it didn't win more of these awards. You said it won 4 awards?
Yeah.
But yeah, how many was it nominated for?
It was nominated for 8, so it won half.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still surprised though that they didn't, like, take a clean sweep, to be honest.
The only one that surprises me is original screenplay. I just feel like it was such an original idea of dreams within dreams of within dreams. I know the dialogue, even when I was watching, I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of like a cheesy line. And some of the dialogue was a little, you know, some of the dialogue was a bit odd. But just the, how he was able to create such a complex story so simply, right? Like, it's such a, it's so easily digestible to everyone in the audience. This was one of the biggest blockbuster films of the year. But it might be one of the most complex films I've ever seen. But it's able to so easily make everyone understand what's going on, because that's just how good the screenplay was. So I felt like, I don't know, we are going to eventually discuss the winner of the best original screenplay, which we'll see whether or not we think it deserves to win. But I will be shocked if I changed my mind, but I do think this should have won Best Original Screenplay. It's a strong screenplay.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that.
The score, not so much. I wasn't a huge fan of the score. I like it, but I don't think it should have won. I'm glad it was nominated, but the big boom, boom. Like, it's so loud, the score is so in your face. Maybe if it was more subtle, I'd appreciate it more. But there was definitely better scores this year, so I'm not too bummed it lost.
That's fair.
And then art direction, you know, it's fine. The art direction's good. I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah.
It's solid. It should have been nominated. But
I do like, I did like The Last World, where she completely created everything. I thought that was really cool, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I love, the whole idea of this film is so creative, and this is why I'm excited for Tenet. Because it's supposed to be like his next big project that's going to be similar to this. It's supposed to be very mind-bendy. I'm sure the last scene, it's going to be Andrew's favorite, where it's once again an open-ended question. Oh. I'm sure that's what Tenet's going to be. But I'm stoked. I think the cast is solid. I think it's going to be very similar premise. But instead of messing with dreams, it's going to mess with time.
That makes sense with the name of it and everything.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to kind of see what this director has to bring forth next.
Yeah, and I do think this is a great film. Obviously, I think we've both now said this now. I think it's both of our favorite films of the 4 we've seen so far. And I think it's just a really well done film. I guess we can walk through it as best as we can. It's a very complex film, you know, to simple minds like us. Maybe to all you scholars out there, you guys raise your monocle up.
Scholars and gentlemen.
Yeah, you guys have your monocles up going, oh, this is actually quite a simple film if you look through the analytics of it all. But for, you know, for simple minds like me and Andrea, we were pretty blown away. The one storyline that I completely forgot, completely just erased from my memory, maybe somebody incepted into my mind and took that memory away, because I completely forgot about Leonardo DiCaprio and his wife and that entire storyline. Completely forgot about it. And I loved it. That might have been my favorite storyline of the whole movie, because that's what really brought out these human moments and how Inception, clearly it's not really a nice thing to do, but could damage people more than you would even comprehend. And I felt like that was a great storyline on how the two of them were going through dreams and they eventually couldn't know what reality was. His wife was the one that had the topper and she locked it up and kept it away because she didn't want to know what was real or not. She just wanted to live in this world with her husband, and they had a house. They had this beautiful life, but he knew this was a dream and he wanted to go back. So he took the topper and in its place incepted this idea into her thoughts that she needs to get to reality. This isn't reality. She must come to the real world. They both kill themselves, which brings them back to reality. But little did he know that since he incepted an idea into her head, it grew like a plant. It was a seed in her mind, and she still thought she wasn't in reality. And she eventually killed herself in real life. And to me, that was the strongest storyline of this whole film. The main plot was great, but I felt like this undertone of what Inception did to Leonardo's character was great. That was my favorite part.
Yeah, it was so deep. That's like Quentin said, you really saw the more human moments within this storyline. And I loved it. I loved the fact that she didn't know reality from a dream. And he's the one that caused that. And you don't even find that out till the very end of the movie when he finally is like, this is my fault. This all happened this way.
Yeah. And they leave tones of it throughout. He mentions he's done Inception before. He has his own world and his memory that he goes back to. All these little clues that eventually connect. So you kind of understand what's going on more and more every time. And I think the pacing for all that was great.
And from the very beginning, you see her in the opening dream. And she's always there because she's just in his subconscious, always just hiding and then coming out. And she always ends up doing something bad to mess up Leonardo DiCaprio's plans. And it's really interesting to see kind of how it all just came full circle.
Yeah, no, I thought that was definitely the strongest part of the film, which is funny because most people, if you were to ask them, oh, hey, what's your favorite part from Inception? They would say, oh, the hallway fighting scene, or oh, the last 10 seconds with that topper, or oh, and the car is falling off the bridge into the water in slow motion. Like, they think of all these iconic shots, and nobody, I don't know anybody that would say, oh yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio and his wife's subplot line, that was the strongest part. Just because I don't think it's got that iconic cinematography, even though I would even argue the hotel room with all the stuff breaking down around them, like all thrown astray, I thought that's a very iconic visual as well, but people tend to forget that part.
Well, and like my favorite part of the movie, and I just can't get it out of my head, is the fact that when he would go to sleep, he would go to the hotel and each level was a different memory from their relationship. And that was the coolest visual I thought of all.
Very cool visual. Mm-hmm. How his, whenever he goes to sleep, he just dreams up this hotel.
And then I love how the co-star follows him there, and then she finally realizes kind of like what's going on.
And I like her character. Obviously, she's great. And They need to have someone new into the group so they can explain stuff to her, aka us. Like, she was The reason why they could bring all this exposition in, right? Like, oh, hey, you're new. This is what this does, and this is what we do, right? Like, kind of a way to tell us what they do. So I appreciate what she's doing here, but they make her design the three dream structure of the biggest moment in all of their lives. They all have to make this insane 3D layer chess move with this giant Inception plan, and they are making her be the one to set it all up. This is her first time. This is like her first time at the rodeo, and they're giving her the biggest job of her life. Like, I felt like they should have had one of the other guys design the maps. Isn't this supposed to be their biggest move yet?
Yeah, I don't understand why they had her do it, but I get why she's there. They needed her to move the plot forward in the movie.
Yeah, so, you know, that didn't make much sense, but they needed to have her there to introduce everything. So, makes a lot of sense. Was much more effective than narration. That would have been a lot of narration to have somebody explain to us what's going on. But the actual Inception itself, the big three-layer plan to incept this idea into someone's mind, is about half of the film. The last half of the film is this entire dream sequence that lasts forever, and you just never want it to stop. I was shocked that we were already getting onto it, but I was loving it. It was over an hour of a dream sequence, but it was just so good. So they need to incept this idea into someone's mind to sabotage its own father's company, because he's a competitor for this one guy that's hiring everybody to do this Inception move.
Sorry, and I was going to say, that was one of my favorite parts as well. I actually really did like the end of that storyline, and I actually didn't end up crying at the end. And Quentin's like, why are you crying? Whenever they eventually get to the father in the very end of the movie, and he realizes his father was never actually calling him a disappointment, and he finds the little pinwheel in the safe. Oh, that was so touching, because he just thought his father hated him his entire life.
Yeah,
oh,
it's a good human film.
That was a good human moment as well.
Yeah, it's good. It's good that they were still able to sprinkle in some humanizing moments in such a complex, very technical film. Obviously, the only awards it won were technical awards. It didn't win any screenplay, any acting awards. It only won sound, cinematography, visual effects. That's what this film really shined. And it was shown throughout that it was a very technical film, but it still had some great heart. It was a beautiful film. Now, The Dreams Within a Dream, it seemed complex, but they really kind of showed it at the beginning when they were first shown the dream sequence, and they were in a dream, but then they broke out of the dream and they were still interrogating the guy. And when he fell to the floor, was on the carpet, he realized, wait a second, this isn't the same carpet that I have in my office. This is another dream, isn't it? And that was just the first 30 minutes, was just setting up, hey, there are layers to this. And that's what we got for the last half. There was the first dream, which is them driving on the streets in this vehicle, and then they fall to sleep inside the vehicle, and they go into the hotel, and that's the second layer. And then everybody except for one guy falls asleep in one of the hotel rooms, and then they go into, like, the mountains, the summit. And that's to get to the final dream sequence. Obviously, then there's a fourth layer, where they go into, like, the unknown, the subconscious? They go there, but it's supposed to be three layers here. And I love how, obviously, in the story here, dreams are a lot faster than real life. Your dream could feel like it is lasting days, but it's only a couple hours. And that's what the story is here, where each dream, whatever's happening in that dream, in the next level up, the reality of it, it's only going to be a few seconds. And I think they really play that well here, where you have the scene where the van, which is the first level of the dreams, it rolls off the road. And so for the next few minutes in the second sequence, the hallways, they're now spinning. And then when the van is about to fall, everybody's now in the sky for the rest of the film. So I feel like the dreams, they build off of each other, and just the pacing and the visuals and all that cool stuff. I think it's really effective.
Yeah, there were so many cool visions, images, not animations.
I didn't see Woody or Buzz there.
You're so funny.
All of a sudden, Lotso comes in and Andrew goes, that's it! I hate this movie!
I'm done. Yeah, overall, it was just really good. And they touched on, yeah, like you said, every technical part of movie can, and they won most of the awards, so for that part. I didn't even realize until you said a minute ago that they weren't even nominated for, like, best actor or supporting actress or anything like that, which I was kind of shocked, because I thought, you know, there were some pretty good performances in this.
Yeah, I think the only one that was really worthy is the lead, Leonardo DiCaprio. I think he was solid. The rest of them were all fine. I don't think they added anything super unique that makes me go, oh yeah, that should get a nomination. But Leonardo DiCaprio, especially because he's so loved by the Academy, even though he barely wins, I'm shocked he didn't get a nomination. And pretty much it was just going for all the technical awards here. And I just think that's because I don't think the Academy loved this film. I guess it won 4 awards. You know, the Academy's got to love it at some point. Yeah. I'm sure they did. But yeah, I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was great. And I don't think we touched on it that much. But for me, my favorite scene is the hallway scene. I think it's absolutely amazing how they're able to get that footage of the hallway just turning and the fight scenes in the spinning hall. Mm-hmm. What a cool visual. Just they're fighting on a spinning hallway. That's always been one of the most iconic shots from this film. And whenever I think of Christopher Nolan, I think of Heath Ledger's Joker from Dark Knight, and I think of the spinning hallway scene. That's always the one that always makes me get real excited. Well, what about you? Do you got any more favorite scenes of yours?
I kind of already went over mine. I just really love the hotel that he made up in his mind. And I love the very end whenever the rich guy gets to his dying father and he finds out that he wasn't a failure to his father the entire time. I love those real moments. Like, the hotel, like, gave so many real moments within it. And the fact that he didn't want the co-star to go down to the basement with him and everything, so.
Yeah. What about least favorites? Do you have any scenes that you didn't like?
Really, I can't think of any. It was a really good movie. Like, you know, the beginning was kind of iffy, but I get why they had to show you that so you understood the whole concept of a dream within a dream.
Yeah, exactly. The beginning is just to really make the rest of it so much more clear. Mm-hmm. So I loved that just for the fact that it sets everything up. The only thing I had an issue with, I already said, was I do think having that female character just come in and be the one that builds this map does seem pretty crazy to me. But that's just a minor thing, and I completely understand why they had to do it. So I don't have any genuine issues with the film.
No, and this is one of the reasons so far this is my favorite film, is because I literally can't sit here and pick out anything big that really bothered me about this film besides what Quentin said. So I'm really surprised it didn't win. Like, I mean, I don't know. I haven't, like, watched
the... Win Best Picture,
yeah. Ooh,
that, like, would have been nice.
Like, I'm going to have to see what actually won, like, how well that film was done, and I guess watch the rest to get my answer.
This would have been a good film to win. I think less people would have had an issue with it over what did end up winning. So, hey, I support that. I agree. I think this would have been a good winner. Since you're saying you think it should have won Best Picture, I'm going to guess the next question. Does this film deserve to be nominated for Best Picture? Is a clear yes?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like I said, can't say anything really negative about this movie whatsoever.
And I'm with you. I definitely think this should have been nominated for Best Picture. I think it's been a great film. And I'll go first here. So for Letterboxd, out of 5, I'm going to give this 5 dreams within a dream. I'm going to give this 5 out of 5. I think it is a great film. How about you? What are you going to give this?
I'm teeter-tottering between a 4.5 and a 5 because, like I said, I can't really find a flaw within it, actually.
So I was too.
Why not give it a 5? But I don't know. I'm still going to ponder it a little bit, and it will, so either be a 4.5 or a 5 from me.
That's true. By the time I release my review on Letterboxd, it might change to a 4.5. I am very on the fence about it, but I agree with you. It's very on the line. I think it's a great film. And if you haven't seen this film, which I'm sure everyone has except for Andrea until now.
Yeah, I was the last person ever to see this film.
It's on Netflix. You should check it out. Yeah, Netflix was like, wait, someone is watching this? I thought everyone's seen this by now. Who's this Andrea Tennis?
Yeah, they try to throw rocks at me.
Whoa.
For not watching it, yeah.
All right, so glad we got those both out of the way. Let's talk about what they both were nominated for together. Obviously, they were both nominated for Best Picture, but they were also both nominated for sound mixing and editing, art direction, and cinematography. Let's talk about it here. We can talk things through. We already touched on cinematography, so we'll quickly address that one first. Which one do you think did a better job with the cinematography?
Well, I think now that we have talked about these two, it's pretty clear that Inception definitely took the cake on that. They did a lot of crazy things in that and a lot of visuals. It's just very appealing to the eye.
Like, I can't speak to this because I clearly haven't seen every film made, and or not even close to all the greatest films made. I'm working on it, but I clearly haven't seen all of them. But I think up to this moment, this might be the best film with cinematography. Like, this just has some of the most gorgeous, iconic, fantastic shots. And it's hard to argue how this wouldn't win. I obviously wasn't following the Oscars that strongly when this was out, but I can only imagine this must have been considered a slam dunk. Like, I don't know if this was really in contention with any of them, but True Grit did have some good cinematography. Just, you know, hard to compete against Inception here. Now, the art direction. Do you know much about art direction? I believe it's the same thing as production design. Only because there was no production design in the 2011 Oscars as there is now. So I feel like they just changed the name, which would be like the setting. You're a big Wes Anderson fan.
Yep.
I am pretty sure he wins production design every single time he makes a film now. Because it would be the color palette. It would be the buildings or just like the set. So, for example, last year, 2019, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the fact that they recreated Hollywood, that's the production design, right? I'm sure art direction is very similar in that aspect. Mm-hmm. So, Inception had multiple production designs. They recreated, what, a cityscape, a hotel. They had the mountain area as a production design. They had all these different areas. But on the flip side, True Grit had a really great Western town. I thought the landscapes were gorgeous. So which one do you think was more effective for the art direction?
Art direction? I don't know. I still feel like I'd give it to Inception overall.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know. I feel like neither of them were super strong.
Well, yeah. But if I had to pick one, right, that's yeah,
exactly
how I would lean.
Yeah. I might have given it to True Grit. To be fair, I haven't seen that in a week and a half, so maybe I'm forgetting some iconic shots. But Inception does have some gorgeous settings, so I might stick with that as well. And then the sound mixing and editing. So sound. we'll put them together. This is 2020, baby. We're putting them together again.
I'm not sure. I know that Inception was just really loud with everything it did, and that got a little annoying to me. That's one reason I don't really like action thriller movies sometimes. And
you're thinking more of the score, though.
Am I?
Yeah, okay. Sound would be like the gunshots from True Grit, right? Or like the waterfall background noise in True Grit. I'll go first. I think Inception, I thought all the sounds and the quick movement of everything, I thought it all worked great. It did win, so I'm sure it was done better. So I guess I'll just give it there.
Yeah, no, I would 100% agree Inception as well. I didn't even know that they had one for, like, just sounds in general.
Yep.
It's kind of odd. But
hey, imagine that they had two awards for them. They finally put them together. Imagine
that seems so giving silly. Out two awards. My God.
Look at that. I am shocked you were so high on Inception. I really thought this was going to be a big fight here. I thought you were going to give it a 2.5 or a 3. And
whoa.
I was
going
to have to fight you down from it.
I literally have no idea why you thought.
Because I had to convince you for a week and a half to
put it on.
You had
to convince me because it's a long movie. I don't like watching long movies.
Yeah, I think the lesson I learned here is whenever I ask Andrew, okay, what movie do you want to watch next for the list? When she picks one, we'll do the opposite. We'll watch the other one first. So then I'll know she's really hyped to watch the one afterwards.
Fair. That's fair.
That's the strategy, I think.
Yes.
All right. Well, that is it for this round of the Oscars here. We got Inception and True Grit out of the way, just like 127 hours, and Toy Story 3. We are now 2/5 of the way done before we get to our actual ceremony here.
I thought you were going to say it's 127 degrees in our room. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. So Andrea is sweating buckets over here.
It's so hot in our apartment, and we're not allowed to have the fan on when we podcast, so our room is seriously hot right now.
So I'm sure she is excited to say goodbye to all of you guys.
Sorry. Yeah. Usually I'm not, but right now it's really hot.
Yeah, she really hates all of you.
Oh my God. Well, I did say that when we played Jackbox today.
What, we were in the middle playing Jackbox and you're randomly like, by the way, those people that listen to our podcast,
no,
they're the worst.
Oh my God.
All right. Well, until next time, guys. See ya.
All right. Bye.